Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's Sunday the 17th of March. I'm Phil Carroll.
And I'm Kevin Hornsby.
And it finally feels like spring is here, despite the rainy weather. A rarely seen yellow thing made an appearance, a brief appearance this week, Kev, and I couldn't believe it. And are you glad to be back home now and sort of settling into life in Cairo after that whirlwind couple of months you've had?
Yeah.
Back to the gym and back to the healthy eating, I'm hoping I'm going to hear now.
Yeah, still. I just had a chocolate bar, so I'm still on the green carbonated drink, which is stevia instead of sugar, so it's supposedly no calories. Trying, but it's been busy since I came back because I've had lots of things to organize. So yeah, it has been whirlwind going about because I was in South Africa, then I was in Namibia, then I was in the UK, and then now I'm back here for a few weeks, and then we're heading to Zambia at the end of April, May.
Isn't it?
And then I'm supposed to be going to Germany and Switzerland as well shortly after that. Nothing to do with the roast, but yeah, so it's crazy mad. Yeah,
get back on healthy eating. I mean, it's funny because your talk about soups the other week prompted an email from a listener from Harry Norman, and he was like, "Well, I like the roasted sweet potato and sweet red pepper. Would you like to try my roasted celeriac and sweet potato soup?" And he sent us a recipe, didn't he? We do need to get onto that at some point, but. It's amazing what these crazy things you think we talk about. We're rambling on, but actually quite a few of the listeners send in some interesting emails related to the topics, and it's given us a few investments to look at, but an interesting one. But yeah, I mean, let's have a look at some of the news items that have dominated the headlines this week. And we saw SpaceX put its first rocket into space. I don't know if you saw that, that was an interesting movement. I think it was the third attempt. So Elon Musk will be very happy that that one went as successful as it could have gone. Obviously, the previous two attempts, I wouldn't say they were failed, but they described it as a rapid deconstruction or something like that. Basically, it's the terminology for it failed, you know, it exploded in flight. So that was an interesting one. We saw the disgraced Tory donor Frank Hester spouting racial abuse at Diana Abbott. Do you think, is Rishi going to respond on that? I mean, obviously Labour and the Lib Dems have demanded that the Tories hand back the money.
Yeah, politics, 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 politics. I mean, what is going to happen in the UK? What is going to happen? Having just come back from the UK,
they've just announced this morning, haven't they, that there's not going to be the May election, so it's going to be pushed back to presumably November, isn't it?
Yeah, and there is not good signs in the UK. Obviously, I mean, I have been there since before Christmas. A lot of high streets were closing their doors in London, even, and Liverpool as well. So. Yeah, but I think it's going to be fairly shallow in terms of what's going to happen. But obviously, the people who are affected are the people who are affected. It's going to hit them hard. But the rest, what's going to happen? Well, who knows? I mean, we had the budget. Didn't really change a great deal, did it really? I mean, I don't see that it had a major effect on anything. I was glad to see the finally closed the rich people's loophole, which was the non-dog thing. Which was good. Like, you're either in or you're out, guys. You either live in the UK or you don't live in the UK.
Yeah.
Non-resident, not non-domicile. So that was changed. I think the UK as a whole needs businesses, and it needs businesses to create things. I mean, I thought this was the whole idea of Brexit. I mean, that was one thing I had a conversation with my sister, I think it was, when Brexit was talked about. You know, we're going to be the place where everyone wants to do business, you know, come here instead of Europe. Well, that's been a load of baloney, hasn't it, really? Because it's not happening.
No.
I know things take time, but yeah, let's see what happens. But it's not happening as predicted, is it?
And then they announced potentially that this new ISA, this extra 5K allowance for people who've maximized their 20, is potentially not going to happen now. They're going to pull the plug on it. So it's already the sort of backtracking slash U-turning on the spring budget. So let's see how that one pans out. There was also, I don't know if you saw, the Russian elections are happening this week. I mean, will Putin win the election? Will Putin threaten enough voters to make sure that he wins another term?
Sure, he's going to win another term. It's not even an election.
Yeah,
he's not going against anybody, really, is he? I don't know. I haven't looked into it that much, but any opposition is not going to be enough anyway. So
I saw news, an interesting one, that Russia was believed to have jammed the satellite signal on an RAF aircraft carrying Grant Shapps back from his trip to Poland, obviously labelled a wildly irresponsible act of electronic warfare. The GPS signal was interfered with for about 30 minutes while the jet flew close to the Russian territory of Kaliningrad on the Baltic Sea. Mobile phones could no longer connect to the internet, and the aircraft was forced to use alternative methods to determine its location. So it could have been quite choppy there, that the fact that they jammed the aircraft's sort of navigation signals. Short bets against major lithium producers are facing challenges as the previously expected oversupply begins to diminish. The UBS Group AG and Goldman Sachs have reduced their 2024 lithium supply forecast by 33% and 26% respectively, while Morgan Stanley has highlighted the potential for lower stock levels in China. This adjustment follows a period where lithium prices fell due to supply outpacing demand, leading some producers to decrease output. Consequently, lithium prices are recovering, impacting short sellers who targeted companies like Albemarle and Pilbara Minerals, with short positions exceeding a fifth of their shares worth around $5 billion. Market observers such as Junbei Liu of Tribeca Investments suggest that reducing lithium production capacity is a signal that prices may have reached their lowest point, making short positions risky. Pilbara Minerals recently accepted a pre-auction offer for lithium spodumene concentrate, indicating a potential uptick in prices, according to Bloomberg Intelligence analyst Molson Cross. And I guess that segues nicely into our next guest, Alchemy Capital Investments, trading under the ticker ALK on the London Stock Exchange and on the Frankfurt Stock Exchange under JV2, is in the spotlight for its ambitious projects focused on processing critical minerals essential for the global battery industry. With a market cap of 7.2 million and shares trading in a range between 71 pence and 279 pence over the last 12 months, Alchemy offers an intriguing investment prospect. At the heart of Alchemy's strategy is the development of large-scale mineral processing refineries in the UK, aimed at serving the burgeoning battery industry. The flagship project, Tees Valley Lithium, is poised to become the UK's largest independent lithium refinery, processing high-value intermediate material into battery-grade product. This project is especially significant given its strategic location within Teesside Freeport, benefiting from exceptional infrastructure and support, including full planning, permission, and environmental permits. But what makes Alchemy stand out is their conservative yet robust economic model, which focuses on processing fees rather than direct exposure to fluctuating market prices for lithium. This model is designed to generate a steady stream of dividends for investors, offering a potentially attractive return on investment. We're delighted to be joined by Paul Atherley. Paul is a highly experienced executive with wide-ranging international and capital markets experience in the resource sector. He graduated as mining engineer from Imperial College London with and has held a number of senior executive and board positions. He's a founding director of Pensana PLC, which is looking to establish the world's first independent sustainable rare earth processing facility in the UK, and he's non-executive chairman of Alchemy Capital Investments. Paul is also a strong supporter of women in STEM, and has established a scholarship which provides funding for young women to further their education in science and engineering. Welcome, Paul.
Thanks for that wonderful introduction, Phil.
Absolutely, no worries. So tell us a little bit more about yourself. As I obviously alluded to, you're the founding director of Pensana, but what sort of got you into these capital markets, and in particular the resource sector in the first place?
Well, I come from a family of doctors, and I realized I had no bedside manner from a very early stage. So I had a distant uncle who was working for the National Coal Board, and I saw the romance in the mining industry. So I went to the Royal School of Mines, Imperial College, and ended up working underground at a very large mine in Australia called Mount Isa Mines. I was a hard rock underground contract miner, ship boss, foreman, mining engineer, basically worked myself up from the bottom of the hole, and then came in to be a mining engineer, mine manager. I did a postgrad in mining geomechanics along the way, and then I did an MBA. And then I ended up owning a mining company, Barrick Myers, that actually went into administration by its bankers. And I sat across the table from a bunch of bankers, and they invited me to join them. So I come for an interview. So I had to go and buy a suit and tie. And the funny story about that was that I went to a department store and I said, I've got a job with an investment bank. And they said, oh, you need to wear this. And it was those days in the 1980s where investment bankers wore blue suits and red ties. And so I walked into the interview, and afterwards they said, you look the part. Well, I said, well, I should thank the guy in the department store because he dressed me correctly. Anyway, cut a long story short, was I worked for HSBC in the investment banking side. And whilst I was there, it became clear that I was raising money for people who were sitting across the table from me, who were doing what I wanted to do. So I decided to leave investment banking and go and do what I do now, which is develop small to medium-sized mining and processing companies. I had 16 years in Australia, 10 years in China, and now I've moved back to the UK and always had a plan to come back to London to do what I'm doing now, which is developing these smaller, interesting companies. And just the final bit of the journey is I've sort of recognized that finally, late stage in your career, that the people who make money in mining are people like Ivan Glazenberg from Glencore and Jim Ratcliffe from Ineos. And they're actually in the processing side rather than the mining side. So I spent my career in the bit of the industry where not necessarily people make the rewards they would want, whereas other people who take one step away from that and are in what I would call the midstream, they capitalize on it and do very, very well. So if you like, that's a little bit, that's part of the journey to arrive at alchemy, is to recognize that the mining side of it can be quite cyclical and quite challenging, whereas the midstream is a lot more consistent.
Sure. So let's just talk a little bit about the project itself and you know, how did you identify it? Why lithium and the carbonate and also why the location in Teesside?
So it was in Pensano. We were looking to, we are looking to develop this mine in Longonjo in Angola. And it became very noticeable that the price the Chinese pay for mine gate product, whether it be a concentrate or a mixed rare earth carbonate, quite low. And yet the products they sell, the magnets or the downstream products, are quite high. And China's captured this midstream and making a lot of money out of it. So we said, I spoke to my Pensano CEO, Tim George, and we chatted about it. And said, well, why can't we do midstream separation? Why can't we do that midstream bit? And so quite literally, from first principles, went and looked around the UK and Europe, looked at Saxony in Germany, looked at Marseille in France, and Amsterdam. And it turned out the UK has got these fantastic infrastructure, places like Teesside, Humber, Merseyside, Grangemouth. And basically, they're essentially chemical parks in a port. And now they've subsequently been turned into free ports. And even more amazingly, they've been subsequently linked to the world's biggest offshore wind farms. So I would say to you, we identified that these things, chemical parks and bad weather, that's offshore wind and a chemical park, is a fantastic place to do midstream processing. So we're progressing it with Pensano, and we thought about doing other metals in Pensano, but Pensano is a pure play on rare earths. So we created Alchemy to incubate these midstream processing facilities, and starting off with lithium, with Cheese Valley Lithium. So we identified Wilton International Chemical Park in the Teesside Freeport, which amazingly actually has an HVDC cable coming from the world's biggest offshore wind farm, lands right in the middle of the chemical park. Right in the middle of it. So you have this amazing combination of Freeport, chemical park, offshore wind. So I'm looking at that going, that has to be a great location for midstream processing. So we looked initially at lithium, which we can talk about with Teesside Lithium, but we've just announced a joint study with a joint venture agreement with Sierra Resources, which is the world's biggest graphite producer outside China. And they can see exactly the same thing. So all the characteristics that we're identifying, and we are looking at other metals as well. So if you'd like, Pensano was the catalyst. But Alchemy is actually being set up as an incubator company, which will develop these first lithium, hopefully graphite, and then another metal we're working on. And basically, we're looking to bring in, as you said in the intro, high-value product from anywhere in the world, process it into battery-grade product for either the OEMs or for the cell manufacturers or the cathode active material customers. And it plays very, very strongly to being part of the European ecosystem. If you're familiar with the chemicals industry in Europe, you know, if you're going to buy chemicals, you don't want to buy it from a mine site in Western Australia or South America. You want to buy it from an identified producer within the European ecosystem. And that's what we're looking to do. So it's been a little bit of a journey, but we've landed in an incredible space. And, you know, I was at the All Party Parliamentary Group for Critical Minerals with Nazra Ghani day before yesterday and made the point to her, you know, everyone talks about the Inflation Reduction Act, how the United States is pouring lots of money to attract people to locate in the US. I said, we don't necessarily need to do that because we've got literally billions of pounds worth of sunk capital already there. The port, the chemical park, the offshore winds, and the HVDC cable, that combination does not exist anywhere else in the world. So I'm saying, no, we don't have the Inflation Reduction Act subsidies or incentives to go and relocate there, but we have the sunk capital. So we're capitalizing on that sunk capital. Also capitalizing on something else that that you guys will know very, very well. Everyone talks about this country that there's no manufacturing. That's absolute nonsense. Manufacturing is the chemical industry. What the chemical industry does is in bring in high-value materials and turns it into basically consumer products or products for industry that keeps the modern economy going. And we're really good at it. Really, really good at it. So we're tapping into something that the UK is got the great infrastructure, got the power base, and very good. Just final thing, because you got me talking about it, is one of the big things that people talk about is power. We've seen Germany close all its nuclear plants. And as a result, almost inevitably, 10 years later, after Energiewende was introduced, BASF, the world's biggest chemical company, leaves Germany, citing higher regulation and higher costs. So the UK, again, I think has got an advantage. We've got many gigawatts of power being installed in offshore wind. And okay, it only represents a relatively small percentage of the total energy generation in the UK, but it's super green and super low cost. And so if you can tap into that as an industry, if an industry can, we have huge benefits. And so we have this thing, two things called the British Industry Supercharger Scheme and the Energy Intensive Industry Scheme. We tap into those, means we can get low cost electricity and green, certified green, which means that our products that we produce, so Tees Valley Lithium and hopefully Tees Valley Graphite, will have incredibly low embedded carbon, which is incredibly important because ultimately we'll be selling electric vehicles. Anything consumer facing will have some form of carbon rating on it. And the carbon rating will be a sum of the embedded carbon that goes into producing the product. So very sorry about the long-winded answer.
So Paul,
incredibly interesting space.
As we talk about Alchemy Capital, are you the alchemist is the question. And let everybody know what an alchemist is, because obviously where did the name come from?
It comes from the Arabic. The Arabic was the origins of it, as I understand, are that alchemy was the description of how you throw fertilizer or you cultivate something, and it turns into something bigger. That's corn in Egypt. And then it got changed to this meaning of alchemist, sort of the magic, or in metallurgy, I think it came from. And then more generally, alchemy is more a bit of creativity. So it's more, we like to think it's more of an incubator. Alchemy is an incubator rather than any magic.
Yes. I mean, the definition is a person who transforms or creates something through a seemingly magical process. Some highly imaginative tax shelters dreamed up by the accounting alchemists common.
It's a slight misuse of its origins, but we're very much in the incubator concept and alchemy, using all the things I've talked about, all that infrastructure, all that idea, putting it together, putting all this, that we create this opportunity.
Okay. So going back a step, I want to have a look piece by piece what is in Alchemy Capital, if you like, because I mean, at the end of the day, a lot of people have focused on Teesside and the lithium. The one thing that when I was doing my research that came out, you know, was that you really nothing to do with the lithium price. I mean, the old saying goes that, you know, during the gold rushes, the guy who was selling the shovels or the guy who was buying the gold and then selling it on to everybody else, they were the millionaires, not the people who were actually looking and finding the gold. So it seems to me like you are not necessarily the guy selling the shovels, but you are the guy who's taking the stuff and then doing something with it to enhance its valuation and then selling it on. So really, from a mining perspective, there's zero risk. From a risk point of view of the price of lithium, well, if we assume that lithium is going to be required, then really there is no risk because you're just taking a proportion or a fee for doing what you're doing. So that was the big eye-opener for me. So what's your comments on that in terms of what we're talking
about? No, that's exactly right. So we don't want to take lithium price primary risk. So we will contract with a miner or a supplier to take a lithium carbonate. We will then convert it into a battery-grade carbonate and then sell it on. Now, whether we actually own the lithium along the way through depends on the the particular deal, it may well be somebody just brings us a product and says, convert it into battery grade lithium and we take a fee for that. Or it may be that we contract with somebody to supply on one side of feedstock and then we have an offtake agreement with others. So each deal will be different, but the fundamental economics are that we will have a fee for converting from one chemical product to another. And that's our business model. So we don't take lithium price risk. If we do have a feedstock deal linked to an offtake deal, we'll match them. In other words, it'll be ton for ton and then price for price. So we're saying to investors in Alchemy, when they're looking through to Tees Valley Lithium, is it's a toll treating facility. We're not exposing the company to lithium price risk. Now, having said that, just like a smelter, yeah, there'll be times when there is huge demand for tolling capacity. And there'll be other times when there isn't so much demand for tolling capacity. So it may well be that during big demand times, our tolling fee goes up. During lower demand times, the tolling fee is lower. So the tolling fee itself can move around due to supply and demand, but we don't take underlying commodity risk.
But the interesting thing is, and I mean, I suppose when we talk about London buses, they come, you know, three at a time normally. But the first train, as you talk about in this particular situation, is going to go through this model. And that is obviously a much lower risk of doing business. But I presume, dependent on how much cash has kicked off this business, how much is available, that if the lithium price soars again, then maybe you can benefit from the lithium price in terms of train two, train three, train four being possibly done on a slightly different basis, as in, it's not just toll treating. It's actually going to be, yes, we'll benefit from the lithium price as well from other deals. Is that a possibility or not really?
Not really built into the model. As I said before, it's when there's bigger demand, the toll margin will increase. But the margins are, we're trying to do chemical industry margins of sort of 25%, 30% IRR and, sorry, EBITDA margin. And keep that solid going. We want to be a long-term player. Our growth will come through volume. So we'll do train one, as you've indicated. Once train one's up and running, we'll then look at train two, train three, train four. Right now, as we're speaking, we're working with financiers and they have asked us to show us the demand, show us the offtake. So we've gone to our potential offtake customers and got them to write us letters. And we've got over four times the demand in offtake for train one. It's, you know, so the demand is clearly there. As we've seen, we've announced a feedstock deal with Wogen. They've got plenty of feedstock coming online. So they are the elements that allow for us to put the financing in place and go forward. Trains two, three, and four, there is one variation, two, three, and four, I just want to highlight. Train one is a very standard, what's called global salt route. It's the same process route used everywhere else in the world. But for trains two and three and four, what we'd like to do is go to electrochemical. And for chemical engineers, listen to your podcast, and they'll know what I'm talking about. Is we can do the electrochem process using offshore wind, HVDC cable. We're into a different league, and that's very, very exciting. If we do, because it's super low carbon, it taps into this low offshore wind, and it will be quite groundbreaking to do it on that scale. Now, at the moment, electrochem is out there. We're not there yet. And if we can't cross the bridge technically, we'll keep going. Train two would be blob of salts, but that's where we want to be for trains two, three, and four. Where it comes down to is we want, as I mentioned earlier, what comes a product that has very, very low embedded carbon. So just to sort of explain that, you know.
Just before you go on, yes, the chemical engineers are going to be getting excited, but I'm more interested in how much finance is involved, as in, how much more profitable trains two, three, and four would be if you use this process?
Well, we don't know because we haven't got it signed off yet, but it's more profitable than train one. But train one's very profitable. But again, we're not trying to milk the cow on train. We're simply saying we're looking at chemical industry margins, EBITDA margins. We're looking at very, very long-term sustainable IRR. We're looking at very high levels of gearing. Now we're looking at bond finance gearing, so 60-odd percent going forward. And, you know, what we'd like to do is create a sort of a model that goes through all four trains. Like, however we finance train one, we're talking to the bond financiers about doing a series of bonds, like a bond a Bond series, so that we do Train 1. And then when Train 2 comes along, we go to the Bond and go, so remember that Bond we just did for Train 1 that worked so well? Here's the next one. It's the same location, it's the same everything, except for it's got a slightly different process route. This one's called Electrochem going forward. So a lot of what we're doing and where we'll get the benefit from, Kevin, is not so much that the toll fees will change very much, is that our cost of capital will change and we will get better, maybe better gearing and lower cost of capital going in. And that's, if you look at really good companies, that's where they start to get really good margins, is that they're long-term cost of capital is much better than new companies. And over time, they gradually lower their cost of capital to the point where they become super competitive and they generate better returns that way.
And you're also going to have some economies of scale, I presume, as you increase the trains, obviously, because your fixed costs are going to be
very much
fixed, obviously. I mean, though, fixed costs are never completely fixed, as we all know.
They're semi-variable and variable, as you know. Yeah. The variable costs, you can't do much about, the straight variable, but you can be smart on semi-variable. And as you say, you can spread the fixed costs across a number of trains. So again, that's another one where the toll fee doesn't change, but our operating costs and our financing costs fall. Therefore, our overall return gets better.
Yeah. So moving on. So if we look at that as the lithium side of the business, the second side of the business that we're looking at then is the graphite. So tell us a little bit about graphite. And I presume it's the same model. I mean, we're taking the graphite, we're making it battery applicable, and then we're selling it again.
So that's right. So the graphite goes into the anode of a battery, and there's a very well-established company, Sierra Resources, an Australian company that's operating a very, very large mine in Mozambique. They've just completed and have commissioned a large active anode material facility in the United States called Vidalia, and they're looking to bring that, if you like, cut and paste that plant from the US and bring it to our plug and play facility at Wilton. Now, so we've entered into a joint venture with them. We will do a study with them. The study will take the best part of 12 months. But if that works, then we've got a cut and paste plant and a plug and play facility, or what will be off the bat, they're talking about 20,000 tons of active anode material. That would be one of the largest players in the world straight away off the bat. So that will go straight into being a really big player. So we're very excited about that. And obviously the developmental stage, but it's a huge kudos to Wilton, the UK, and everything we've been talking about, because they saw it. They'd been looking at a location in Europe for some time, and then we took them to Wilton and they saw it straight away and said, yeah, this looks great. We want to work with you. So it's a very strong validation of the model that we're talking about.
Okay. So if we again, go back to the top company, and we've got Alchemy Capital at the top, or then you've got Wilton in terms of both lithium and the graphite. And then we sort of jump to the other side of the world and go to Port Hedland. What's the situation there?
So Port Hedland was where the really two types of lithium in the world. There's the hard rock mines, spodumene concentrate, which is largely from Western Australia. And then there is the carbonate, lithium carbonate, which is largely South America. They're the two big players. And originally, we had this idea that we would get spodumene from Western Australia, convert it into what's called a primary lithium sulfate at Port Hedland, bring this high-value product into Wilton. So a spodumene concentrate is 5 or 6% lithium. A primary lithium sulfate is 30 to 50% lithium. The idea was bring a high-value product. As it happened, when we went to the suppliers, there's much more technical grade carbonate available from South America than there is spodumene available in Western Australia. So if you like, the carbonate model has come up much faster than the Port Hedland model. So Port Hedland's on hold at the moment whilst we don't need it for Train 1, whilst we do carbonate into Train 1. So what I'd say to you is that Port Hedland's on the back burner because carbonate's come up so strongly.
And is that where we finish? Or are we talking about a lithium, graphite, and something else? Or is that it?
So we're looking at all the battery metals. We've looked at nickel. Nickel's more challenging because it's much more volume. There's a lot more volume involved with nickel. I'm not sure we'll be able to do anything in nickel, but manganese is a real possibility. So one of the ones we are looking at is manganese. Been having a discussion with the group now for quite some time. And much like the Sierra situation is we don't want to take any mining or any supply risk. We'll simply say, look, we could work with you to create a facility at Wilson to create a battery-grade manganese product. And manganese is really interesting because there's an awful lot of manganese around in the world. There's about 20 to 30 million tons a year seaborne. And if you can convert that into an intermediate product, bring it to Wilton, then the demand for manganese volumetrically into batteries is one of the biggest demands. And there's a lot more manganese going into batteries than there was before. So it used to be two types of batteries, nickel, manganese, cobalt, which was the lithium hydroxide version, and one was the lower energy density lithium iron phosphate battery. They now created a battery called an LMFP, lithium manganese phosphate. So you've got manganese going into both NMC batteries and LMFP. So actually manganese in terms of volume or tonnage is the big, big growth. So we're not there yet. We don't have any deal. Nothing to write home about. But we, in answer to your question, we are looking at manganese. We'd love to have lithium, graphite, and manganese. And what that means is when we talk to cell manufacturers or OEMs, we become a one-stop shop for supplying them, and you build those kind of cluster effects of competence to supply cathode active materials and OEMs. And we think that will be attractive for them.
Yeah, you become a customer in always lithium, graphite, manganese. And I think that's going to be very important, you know, as we move forward, because we're really only at the beginning of this electrification situation. I mean, everybody says it's a greenification, but I have to argue with people that it's actually not green at all. But anyway, that's for another day, maybe. But the whole thing in terms of the OEMs are going to have to secure the final product and have these things in place. Otherwise, they're going to be in a big trouble to actually provide what they want to provide on the road.
Well, the electrification of motorization is happening, and different car companies in different countries are at different stages. So if you take at one end of the spectrum, you've got Honda, which is still looking at liquids and hydrogen and all sorts of things. And at the other end of the spectrum, you've clearly got companies like Tesla and Polestar and a lot of those, and all the other car companies in between are somewhere along that journey. But they're all heading down that track, and they're being incentivized to do so because the government's pouring lots of money into charging infrastructure and storage, and there are other incentives as well, which is policy driven. So I think the train's left the station, and I do agree with you that we are seeing the electrification of motive power, and the most obvious example of it is electric vehicles and batteries for mobility, which is what we're targeting. The demand is going to be huge. There's going to be a lot of demand for it.
Yeah, I mean, just on that subject, I wanted to just talk about some of the cons potentially, because it's always good to look at both sides. I mean, obviously we saw British Volt collapse. You know, you could argue there's a whole number of reasons why maybe it wasn't the right time, you know, internal mismanagement. Obviously there was the government pledge for something like 100 million, which never came to fruition. You had a lot of attraction from initial customers. I think Lotus and Aston Martin were involved. They secured something like $2.4 billion across five funding rounds. So it was massively funded initially, but then it all failed. And as I said, maybe it was the wrong time. Government pulled the plug on it. But what makes you think that this can succeed, this project, and you can secure the funding and really take it to the end goal and into profitability?
Funding. Simply put, is that British Volt was a $2-point-something billion exercise.
Yeah.
I have a view that you need to fund bite size, and I think bite size is $250 to $300 million. I'm familiar with the bond market and the equity markets, and
yeah,
they've been genuinely comfortable with that size. Once you get into the billions, then it becomes a bigger ask. So I'd say, put quite simply, why will we succeed? Is because each of our train sizes is about $250 to $300 million, and it's a bite-sized financing, and
yeah,
look up with it.
So if we take that initial value you mentioned, so say 300 million, I think that's what the Zeus Capital note said, so that's the initial capital expenditure, the CapEx, for that first train. So I think in the note there was also mention of around sort of toll fees of say $7,000 per ton, and you're aiming for an annual production of circa 24,000 tons from the first train. obviously that could, you know, potentially generate significant annual revenues, and I'm assuming that there's high operational margins as well in there with this tolling model. But just talk us through what you must have run some projections, and obviously we know what you can and can't say, but within how many years would you expect to be able to for this to, this project to pay off that initial capex?
So it's 4 years notionally, but it'll probably be faster than that. But the way we structure it is quite a conventional 60% bond. This is at the Tees Valley Lithium level, a 60% bond. And obviously we've gone to the bond guys and talked to them about it, and they've written back to us and said that sort of works. And then we'd look for equity of around 40%. So ballpark, you're talking, you know, $180 million bond, $120 million worth of equity. One of the advantages we have is there's a considerable interest, both from an equity and a debt side, to fund assets in the UK. Funding it into public company is problematic. Funding it at the asset level is a lot more straightforward, particularly when you've got tier one counterparties on the supplying and offtake, and then you're in chemical park and all the rest of the things that go with it. So we're reasonably confident that we will be able to fund Tees Valley Lithium at the asset level using bond finance and direct investment equity at the asset level. And we will then end up with, in a perfect world, with Alchemy owning 60-ish% of the train one of Tees Valley Lithium. This is a highly geared situation, so obviously the asset has to service the bond. So we structure the bond in a way that allows for the capital development of the asset, and then repays the bond over, say, 5 years. But at the same time, allow for, after all the normal cash sweeps that the bond financiers require, beyond that, we'd like to see dividends flying up to Alchemy. So it's not like the junior mining company, which I'm familiar with, which puts loads and loads of debt into the corporate level, and you never see anything flying the other way until the financiers are long gone. We're trying to create a structured dividend model based on surplus cash flow comes out of the asset, goes up to the Alchemy level, and we distribute that back to shareholders.
So as the circa 60% of, say, train one in this particular situation is then processed, everything starts to work, the cash machine, if you like, starts to pay out, then 40% of that money will go towards the bonds and 60% of that money will come back to Alchemy? Or is that a bit simplistic?
No, that's right. I think Zeus had modeled it on 50-50. So they're being more conservative. So we could take 50-50, but then that's exactly right. That's what we're looking to achieve.
Okay. So the elephant in the room, obviously, you've partially answered. The elephant in this room is you need a lot of cash. What about the Topco? What about Alchemy in terms of, you know, going forward, paying the wages, paying the staff, paying the offices, et cetera, et cetera? We're quite lean and mean.
We don't take very much money out at all. In fact, I've been putting money into this company for quite some time now, so lending it interest-free, you know, so we are funding this ourselves.
Why would you do that, Paul? That's silly. Why would you lend money to something interest-free? Tell me.
I just think it's the right thing to do. I just think if you're going to ask people to invest equity in a company, you've got to show willingness to put your money in. I put $1 million into Pensana at considerably higher levels than we are today. I just think if you're going to ask people for money, you've got to put your money in first.
How much of Alchemy do you own yourself?
38%, something like that.
Okay. So if this happens...
I would buy more, but I'm restricted by concert party arrangements that until we do more issuance, I can't participate. Anyway, the bottom line is that we, as a management team, are absolutely wedded to this story, and we want to own more of this company rather than less, and we're willing to put our own money into it or take on liabilities on behalf of the company to succeed. We're absolutely committed to making it happen. In terms of what our funding requirements are, we've said consistently that Alchemy will only raise G&A, or general administration. So at any point in time, we might raise half £1 million, something like that. We might raise a little bit more from time to time to clear off some creditors, but basically that's all it is. The big funding round will come through two major fundings. One is, as we've highlighted, is a mezzanine funding for Tees Valley Lithium Train 1, which basically takes us from where we are now through to FEED, through to the main finance. So to achieve that, we pull down mezzanine. Mezzanine is debt, as you know. And you go, okay, well, what you're doing, you're loading up the company with debt. Well, actually, we're loading up Tees Valley Lithium with debt that gets taken out by the bond financiers. So to achieve that, we get the mezzanine financiers to work with the bond financiers. So their takeout is when they put the money in to get Tees Valley Lithium Train 1 from where it is today. Two main finance. The main finance is the bond and the equity I talked about. Those mezzanine financiers get taken out by the bond. When the bond comes,
it's a bit like having a bridge. It's a bit like having a bridging loan on buying a house. A little bit like that.
Yes, that's right.
It's only this is the capital markets way of saying it. It's mezzanine finance instead of bridging loan. But if you have two houses and you have to buy the second house, then you take a bridging loan until you've sold the first one. In this particular situation, we're taking mezzanine finance to build the thing. Then the bond funding comes in when they know it's there and ready to go. The mezzanine finance goes away. Mezzanine finance obviously costs a bit more because they're taking some risk, but that this is reality. This is how business works.
Well, I think that's a very good description, and I'll defer to your international property development experience, Kevin, and to explain brilliantly bridging and mezzanine finance. That's exactly how it works. In this particular case, the proposed mezzanine financiers, and I'm not giving any names or giving any times or dates or quantities.
But why not? Tell us when and how.
They've worked with the bond financiers before, and in our public domain, they've announced a deal exactly like this, a mez to bond, as they call it, going forward. So that's our model, and it's again this model where we're trying to protect the dilution, the number of shares that are on issue in Alchemy, because we want to gear up at the asset level, develop at the asset level, and distribute up to Alchemy going forward. And if that model works, and that becomes a series, basically becomes a series of bonds across trains 1, 2, 3, and 4. And then again, we've not done this yet, but if the studies on graphite work, we can then take that financing model and apply it to graphite. I have to say, Kevin, your property analogy is really good, because the property comments are, as I understand it, in the UK, particularly in the industrial and commercial sector, are very much cut and paste. I mean, there's nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what we're trying to do is create that plug and play facility in a chemical park in the UK with all of that, and they just do a cut and paste for the financing.
For some people in the UK, they would buy their first property and finance it, and then obviously that money would come directly to them because they are the direct owners of it. But as you become more of a property investor, and I haven't done this myself, by the way, but you create a limited company, and the limited company buys the houses, and then the limited company borrows the money, which is effectively what you're doing, only obviously in a chemical park point of view. And then you are effectively the top company then, in terms of you own the limited company, so therefore everything comes up your way. But it's the limited company that's taking the risk, not you as the top co, if you like, as the investor. So I can see it will work. Obviously, as I said, the elephant in the room is making that happen. So that's where we have to depend on your banking background and say, yes, is it more likely to happen than not? I think it is. I think your confidence is there that these things are going to happen. You know, the ability to help the UK economy here is also important. I mean, from a jobs point of view, what are you going to create in this chemical park?
So it's 1,000 jobs when you go into peak construction. So, and I haven't mentioned it, and we don't make a big noise about it, but obviously we're talking to government, and we got some experience with government, and we're talking to the various supportive government agencies. There's a lot of interest. There's nothing we can say about that other than we're talking to them and we're hoping for a positive outcome. But it would be not unexpected if government got behind this story and helped us in some way. And that would, the effect of that would be to lower our cost of capital, because Phil mentioned earlier the £100 million was offered to British Vault. That was actually in the form of a grant. And the reason why they didn't draw down the money was the government requires you to spend the money first, and then they reimburse you, with the way the grant works. Well, the way we would do that, if we were to, and I'm not suggesting that we've got this, but if we were to get any form of grant, we would use that to lower the cost of our bond financing. Because once the bond financiers can see that you've got a government grant to repay money, their risk factor falls and your coupon is a lower rate, because people feel more comfortable that you're more able to to repay it. So we coming back to the earlier point, we think government support should translate into a lower cost of capital.
Okay. But you're not getting a government grant. Maybe, sort of.
When and if we do, we'll announce it. But right now,
okay. Okay, very good. So how do you see Alchemy in 3 years, 5 years, 10 years? Assuming, obviously, that first finance has happened. Because once the first finance has happened, then the rest will fall like dominoes, because ultimately, once you've achieved it once, it will not be an issue to repeat. So how do you...
So the Zeus report talks about, in terms of valuation, it's between 10 and 20 times where we are now. And we think that would unlock very quickly if we land things that you've been asking about, Kevin. So if we land MES, if we land the offtakes and all the things we've been talking about, then we go from being a £10 million company to a £100 million company very, very quickly. There's a 10 times uplift straight away. But we think as we then move into, you know, people can start looking through to the dividend stream, that it's more than 20 times. So we unashamedly talk about £5 near term and then £25 medium term a share for the company. A reasonable level of confidence saying that, Kevin, is that we're not about to issue hundreds of millions of shares in the company. The shares are quite tightly held. And, you know, if we can finance at the asset level, then apart from doing issuances for G&A, then we don't need to issue more paper. So the paper gets ever more valuable. So that's the model. That's the plan. In 3 years' time, we would anticipate that we will be well into production for train one. We will be about 9 months into the first production from train one from Tees Valley Lithium. And as you say, we'll be looking at train two at that point. And by then, hopefully, the full joint venture development for graphite will be underway. So we may well be having one train in production, one electrochem train underway, and graphite maybe in development. So yes, who knows what that would translate into to market cap, but it would be a very exciting time.
Yeah, as you mentioned before we started talking, maybe you become Inos, and which football club would you buy?
Well, I'd have to buy it off Jim Rafter because I'm a Man U supporter of one.
No! He says there's a Scouser. We've got you this weekend. By the time this goes out, I think the result will be known. It's Saturday, is it? We're playing in the FA Cup. So how confident are you?
About Alchemy, very, very confident. Less confident about my football team.
Nicely twisted there.
Yes, like Manchester United versus Liverpool in the FA Cup. Who's going to win? Your prediction?
I think so. It'll be 1-0 Rashford.
1-0 Rashford. Okay, it might be 1-0 in it, Rashford initially, but then after that, I very much doubt it's going to stay 1-0. But anyway, we will see. Anyway, going back to the note, is there anything in the note that you would like to sort of point people towards that is really, you know, this is what it's all about?
I think the key is what we've been talking about. This is not a junior mining company. It's going to blow out the share capital. We're going to have roughly the number of shares on issue at the moment. The only issues we're going to do are G&A. Therefore, any benefit that comes from developing these assets, whether it be a dividend stream, whether it be an IPO, whether it be a trade sale, the benefits, the consideration from those assets goes straight up to Alchemy shareholders, and we will distribute them. That is, the aim is to actually get the money to flow back to shareholders. So I'm a big shareholder. I want to see dividends and returns coming to me alongside all the other shareholders of the company. So it's unashamedly a dividend machine rather than a hit-and-run capital gain type junior company.
Is there a reason why you only have 8.8 million shares? I know you want to keep it tight, but that is ridiculously low in terms of what we've seen in terms of the market. And another reason why people shouldn't be put off at paying, you know, currently 80 odd pence for a share when people are sort of honed into paying a penny or half a p or 2p for a share. Sometimes puts people off because, oh, I only get 100 shares.
And then you're complaining when they've got 0.05s, and now you're complaining that there's too little shares.
Yeah, no, but really, people psychologically, people do think about this. Yeah. And it was only, in the last year, you've been at £2.80 a share? I mean, we picked Alchemy Capital as one of our stocks of the year, not for last year, I think it was. And it didn't do the job. Obviously, it went way down because financing has taken longer and many different things that have been delayed for various reasons. And because we really saw the potential, because it, as you've already said, it's not a mining stock. It is a midstream
value adder, which will then obviously then become dividend play and not just in lithium. So why would we look at you and say the next 12 months is going to be very different?
Because we do those elements that you've talked about, financing the offtake and start building, the market will re-rate the stock minimum £100 million. So you get a big, big capital uplift. And then 18 months after that, you would expect us to start distributing dividends to shareholders off a very, very tight capital base.
So for everybody who can't see Paul's face, basically Paul's squirming because he doesn't want to answer the question because basically they think they're going to get the finance. Okay, so let's just hope that you get the finance because I think you're absolutely right. You're going to become a £100 million company, maybe not overnight, but certainly you're going to become within a number of weeks or months, it's going to happen that the penny's going to drop and everybody's going to be scrambling for the shares because all of a sudden what you see now as a price, I'd predict that within 3 to 5 years, you'll be getting that annually as dividend, at least, you know? So that is the chance you take. Now, if finances don't come, Alchemy Capital will not be the best alchemist you've ever had in your life. But if the finance does come, then this is going to pay you very nicely, handsomely for the next however long. That's it. I don't think there's anything else to say. What? Give us your final words, Paul.
So we welcome your interest in the stock. We welcome your listeners to take a position in the company. And we look forward to the news flow to reward them over the next weeks and months.
Yeah. And we wish you luck in all you do. I mean, I think from what you've said, you know, maybe you get 10 million shares an issue, which is just absolutely phenomenal in terms of the market, in terms of what we're doing. And if that happens and you manage to achieve this, this is going to be tens of pounds in terms of its valuation in the future. One last question, Paul, because we always have to do the roast question. What is your go-to Sunday roast meal?
It's a Sunday roast. It's roast beef and Yorkshire pud and sprouts, actually. Sprouts with the Yorkshire pud. Maybe a proper bitter. None of this southern beer. A proper northern bitter.
And honestly, with an actual head on it rather than one that looks flatter than, I mean, anything worse.
I know this sweet stuff. It's got to have a bitter tang to it to cut through the gravy.
I was going to say that you're going to have lots of gravy if you're a Manchester boy.
Absolutely. We have gravy and our chips.
That's right. We have chips with our gravy, you mean?
It's just Teddy Kakei one, isn't it? As thou now moist, as he says.
That's right.
Very good. Well, we'll say Paul Adderley, non-executive chairman of Alchemy Capital Investments. Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks for your time, guys. Really enjoyed that.
Thank you.
So let's have a look at some of the movers and shakers this week. What have we got? We've had Syntomer have moved 65% this week. That's probably the best mover on the markets. And then Vesarion as well, 58.2% came under. There was an announcement for Vesarion on Thursday. They got a South American graphics agreement in place. So that one looked pretty good. Don't know too many details on it, but it certainly moved the dial. What else have you got on the list? Obviously, we talked a little bit earlier on about some of the companies. There was ARC Minerals did quite a large placing, didn't they, earlier in the week. What did you make of that one? Because there's a big retail following on ARC Minerals, isn't there?
Yeah, well, I would imagine the retail were very happy, but at the same time, by the looks of things, there's been a seller in there, a big seller, for a few months now and knocking it down, because everyone was raving about it at 2.5, 3p, I think. And then they ended up raising at 1.8p. And I think part of that raise is to clear out the rest of this investor. For anyone who went in on the raise, I think 1.8p plus 3p warrants was pretty attractive, actually. So
4.4 million was raised. Originally, they announced 3.5, but obviously they over, you know, it was oversubscribed, which is always good to see.
Yeah, no. So they got more money than need. And I think the important thing is that they'll get rid of that investor who was selling down, or institution, I think it was, and then subsequently, the rest of the money is going to be used now to advance the Botswana thing. So they're leaving the major to sort out northwest Zambia, and they'll move on themselves to Botswana and see what's involved, because I think the assets they have in Botswana are pretty attractive as well. So yeah, I think you'll see that rise of 2p and then start to rise over the next week or two, simply because it's cheap, I think, for what they've got. And I mean, we put that the same ones in the same category now. Said I was going to talk about copper, but we've got Extract Resources, we've got African Pioneer, we've got Galileo, we've got Bazant, we've got ARC, as we've just said, we've got Jubilee Metals, all now with the copper price, which has gone up from late sevens to now $8,833 a ton, or 4.12 if you work in the pound per dollar. And now all of these projects are looking even more attractive than they were, you know, 5 days ago when the price was 3.7 per pound and now it's 4.12. So we've had a more than, I think, 10% rise in the price of copper. Why? I think it's based on the fact that China have basically turned around and said that they're going to reduce their production and therefore they'll be putting less exports on the market. So the price goes up. So again, China's manipulating the thing. They now obviously secured a lot of copper assets and now they want a better price for it. So they're starting to do that. And gold is another issue, isn't it? I mean, we saw gold at 2,195, I think, at the end of last week. It's sort of settled down now. It's 2,164, I think it was, at the end of this week. But again, we've got Greatland Gold there, going to be a producer within the next 12 months. And maybe of the whole of Havieron, depending on how that all works out. And we've got another bizarre one, Conroy Gold, all-time low, basically. And we've got the gold price at the highest it's ever been as well, which is just bizarre.
Yeah.
So, it's interesting.
I was thinking about this morning. Like, I don't know why it cropped into my head, but I was thinking about, like, we attended the Master Investor show last week, and it was, I don't know what you thought, but my sort of observations from being there for a few hours was it was very busy. It was a very busy show compared to, you know, when we went back to the Mines and Money thing. Obviously, yes, there was more retail involved in the Master Investor because it was open to, you know, sophisticated investors or high net worth, whatever, however you want to refer to them. But certainly the retail element was there. And it was buzzing, you know, there was most of the coffee places were moving all more, you know, there was all the stands were buzzing. It was busy, you know, all the presentations were very well attended, met some really interesting people there, had some good chats. And it's like, so the interest is there. So, as it, you know, these companies and the people are there for them in terms of investors and they're showing willing, but the market isn't moving the dial. And is that because the market hasn't woken up to it yet? Because ultimately, you know, the market has to value these companies, and if the punters are there to actually buy the stock and are interested, then why is it not moving? Why isn't the market woken up like these investor shows are? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think there are many opportunities out there, and there is always a lag in these things anyway, isn't it? I mean, we have copper doing well, as I've said. We have gold doing well. I think even the other metals like nickel, chrome that we knew about from Jubilee Metals, all doing extremely well. And yet the underlying mining companies are being sort of nailed to the floor. It's got to change. Like, it's got to change. It's like, when will the... And I'm not even sure it's the mentality of the retail investors. I think that the reality of the situation is the market itself is not working.
What drives them? I mean, I know sentiment and all.
Liquidity drives the market.
Liquidity does ultimately. But also, there's got to be a incentive or some sort of reward. Like if people are not going to put, if people's money, they're just seeing the money erode all the time. Like, when it, like the market makers, I don't care. People say, well, market makers don't dictate the price. Well, I don't agree with it. They make the market. They make the market. That is the name. Do you know what I mean? Like, ultimately, they are the ones who can say, well, we'll move that stock 20, 30% based on that news. And I've seen these internal reports that some of these brokers put out, you know, these makers put out in the mornings that say 10% plus 20 unchanged. So they already have an idea of which way that stock is going to move before the bell rings in the morning. So that's the bit, is they have to start valuing these companies properly. Otherwise, companies are going to continue to pull out. You know, we were talking to a couple of investors then. They were saying, unless things improve, they genuinely don't see a future for the AIM and the small cap, you know, these small markets like the Aquis market, the AIM market, even the standard on the main market. They probably won't even exist in 10 years time, because who's going to want to go to those markets?
Yeah, I think they will. I think this is ultimate pessimism at the bottom of the market, and it's extremely difficult even from our perspective to be positive in these situations when we see so many things, you know, going up. I mean, we were talking today, what we're going to talk about, and as we said, we talk about Teck Minerals.
Ted Minerals had an announcement that it was going to have an opportunity to go into the Indian subcontinent with its tech, if you like, with its recycling of lithium-ion batteries and so on and so forth. And the share price did pretty well. I think there's some fundamental things underneath of all of that as well. But because we've seen that share price go from 0.65 all the way up to 1.25, 1.3 in a few days. So something's happening under the skin there in terms of either someone's having to buy back shares or something is happening. Anyway, we don't know exactly what that is. But fundamentally, that company is still very, very lowly valued at either of those prices. For what it has. Now, there are uncertainties there. I did actually speak with Alex this week. Everything's on course still for the prospectus. You know, we should see that in the next number of weeks. And there are things in the pipeline, but he can't tell us, obviously, but we will have to wait. But I think in the coming weeks, that's going to happen. But that is a great British company. And just the same as Alchemy Capital that we talked about today with Paul, these are great British businesses that we need to do well. Alchemy is going to employ 1,000 people in the UK. Tech Minerals is going to employ hundreds of people by the time you take all the different parts of it that are going to be involved. And these are important businesses for the United Kingdom. And I don't understand why the UK, even small investors, not really behind these and saying, you know, go for it. We want you to do it. And there should be, you know, that should be correspondent in its value. You know, I know I'll just get off my soapbox now.
But no, I agree. And I think it was a good announcement. And I guess it'd be interesting to find out a bit more about it when we next talk to them in terms of on the podcast, just to see what this securing of this place basically on the governments. It's called Innovating for Transport and Energy Systems, ITES. And it's a scheme to boost research, innovation, and investment between the UK and India to accelerate the path towards net zero. So it'd be interesting, as I say, to find out how many companies actually, get onto that scheme and get a place on that innovation. But the other thing about it is,
I wouldn't imagine too many.
I wouldn't imagine too many. But what it will allow them to do, Recyclers, will apparently directly access India's burgeoning lithium-ion electric battery sector, which again will in turn will allow them to explore the range of possible commercial opportunities for both its lithium-ion recycling plant, the first industrial-scale lithium-ion facility in the UK, along with its award-winning, obviously, mobile solution, Lieback, Halo box that we've obviously looked at in the past, in collaboration with, as we've alluded to, with the academia, the University of Birmingham and Warwick, etc. So I just wonder whether, I'm reading a little bit too much between the lines, but is this something that's in relation to maybe an Indian car manufacturer? Does it open up the opportunities that way? I just don't know.
Yeah, and there are some big Indian OEMs now, some massive ones. The world is their oyster. The problem is nobody wants to give them the pearl, as in the cash, to go and do all of these things. I mean, I think if TM1 had 10 million quid now as a line from somebody to just go and do their business, then this company would go from strength to strength to strength to strength, and it would be phenomenal. So, you know, who knows? I mean, another company which I really rate, and I can't believe it's dropped back from its 1p raise, is Power Metal Resources as well. Power Metal Resources, I look at all the different component parts, and as Charles did the thing, he had a valuation, I think, of 3.2p on it, currently sitting at 0.75 or 0.8p. I mean, absolutely ridiculous valuation in terms of, you know, its component parts. My view is the Golden Metal Resources, if it gets its funding from the US government, will probably be the full value of Power Metal Resources within the next 6 to 9 months if that happens, which would be bizarre.
And obviously GMET had that news, didn't they, about this single investor who came in for $750,000. That was obviously very good to see. And it obviously had a premium of 5.3% at a premium to the closing price on the previous day. Yeah. So, and then Power Metals, what did you make of the news of that sort of divestment, let's say, of that fourth asset or prospect, or however you want to refer to it as, to Red Rock Resources? What did you make of that?
Yeah, I think it's good. It's going to progress the thing, and they're going to obviously be still involved with getting Red Rock Resources shares and warrants, I think it is, and also then they're in the bag for some cash as well. So that then keeps things rolling. I think there was also an announcement as well about the Saudi Arabian thing as well. Was it late last week?
Power Arabia, that was it, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. There's going to be another rollout from Power Metal. So you're going to have GMET, then you're going to have the Saudi one. And then the other one I'm coming on to now, which is UEE, which is basically the uranium play within Power Metal Resources. There is actually now an IPO happening as we speak. I was informed of it, I think, on Friday or Thursday. So they're raising, I believe, £2 million. And if anybody who is interested in that, send us an email on admin@thesundayroast and we'll send you straight to the company. Or to you can ask around at your broker if you want to do it through the broker, no problem. But basically, that's available. I don't know any more details. So this is not a financial promotion, but if you want us to put us in touch or you in touch with that, then please give us a shout. We can do that. So that, I think, has got great potential. You know, the uranium place and lots of people are doing a lot of work in the Athabasca, as we speak. A lot of explorers in Athabasca. So, yeah, I think a lot of potential. So you've got Power Metal with all of these constituent parts, and the parts are very good, and the whole is also very good. And the other one I want to make a play on right now is Jubilee Metals again. We're just seeing the copper price rise by more than 10%. This is meaning that Jubilee Metals' profit bottom line has gone up by significantly more than 10%, probably 20% or more just in 1 week with the rise in that copper price. And their biggest play over the next 12 to 24 to 36 months is going to be to continue to increase the output of copper in its form to sell, obviously, in Zambia, from all the different places, in Rowan, in taking on the project, which probably should be the end of this year, early next, where there's starting to come off with IRH, yeah. The Mopani project. So, yeah, I think my story this week, and I've been banging on about it for a long time now, and so is Colin Bird, I suppose, is copper. Look at the copper. You know, you got Extract, African Pioneer, Galileo, Byzant, Arc Minerals, Jubilee, all of them Zambia-based or in that part of the world, Namibia as well, as we visited. And they're all going to be producing opportunities to get copper. And Jubilee, I suppose, is the one that is producing copper. And, you know, that's going to have a direct impact on its bottom line straight away. So we've seen Jubilee go up over 6p and then come back down again. But the last few days, it started to rise again because of the copper price. And I'm pretty sure that's the case. And to comment to you about the Golden Metals raise, well, what a fantastic raise. You raised it above the price. I suppose just the same as Power Metals managed to raise above their price at 1p. You've got a sort of cornerstone investor with, because it's half warrants, he's going to have to pay another £600,000-£700,000 for the warrants. You know, if he wants them, 2 years and 25p. My view, that 25p is going to be in play if and when they get the funding from the US Department of, I think it's going to be the Department of Defense, because ultimately that's where the tungsten is, all what the tungsten's all about. So, yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah. And we had some news on Byzant as well, didn't we?
Yeah.
That was relevant because of obviously us being there at Hoop and Gorup and seeing the thing.
Yeah, so that was came, didn't it, on basically the update on the Hope and Gora. Basically, they announced that the EPL 7170 license owned by the company's 80% subsidiary Hope Namibia Mineral Exploration has been renewed for 2 years from the 22nd of October 2023, pending the obtaining of an environmental clearance certificate. This is the ECC that they're waiting on from the Ministry of Environment, Forestry and Tourism. So the company has now engaged an experienced environmental consultant well-versed in Namibian environmental legislation to assist with the application for the ECC. Anticipation of the near-term issue by the Namibian Ministry of Mines and Energy of a mining license, the company is continuing with the work programs and negotiations in relation to financing and the acquisition of equipment and existing infrastructure referenced in its 9th of February 2024 and December 2023 announcement. So hopefully that will come through and they get the mining license, because obviously we've been to site, we've seen it, knowing where that is now, it all sort of starts to it completes the pieces of the puzzle, doesn't it?
Yeah. The other thing that we wanted to talk about was Carillion Diamonds as well, because I see that's going to be moving forward shortly. I did speak with Maureen at Carillion Diamonds this week, very briefly, and we're going to try and get Professor Conroy on, I think, next week to discuss that one, because I think it's very interesting, because I think there's going to be some good progress with that. And obviously, Carillion also has the opportunity, I think it's for nickel in Northern Ireland as well. Yeah. So it's one to look out for. And yeah, also Kendrick Resources as well there in Scandinavia. Lots happening there. There's a few RNSs a few weeks back. And, you know, for its value now, £1.2 million for something that was IPO'd at £8 million. Again, I have no words. It's just a bit crazy.
Yeah.
These things have a value, but obviously nobody's putting the value on them at the minute. This is the issue. So anyway, we can go on and dribble about negative things. But I mean, again, going back to Teck Minerals, had definitely a good rise this week. And I think we are going to get some news in the next while, which should continue to see a positive move in that share.
So, okay. So, I mean, I think we've talked enough about stocks there. What's going on at the weekend? We've got some football.
Come on, you Reds. So we've got Manchester United against Liverpool in the FA Cup. Would have been seen as a massive game in the past. Still is a massive game if you're from Manchester or Liverpool, I think. But let's see what happens. I think it's on Saturday, is it?
The finals. It's not quite the finals yet, but yeah, it'll still be a good game, as you say. It's on Sunday at 3:30 in the afternoon.
Okay, you might listen to this, you might not. Who's going to win?
I fancy United now. I do, I really do. That's about the only thing they've got their eye on this year, and that's the only thing. So there's also Chelsea Leicester as well, isn't there, on the same day as well, in the quarters as well. And then on the day before that, you've got City Newcastle on the Saturday.
Yeah, that should be a good one. Newcastle.
We've just had a draw as well.
The European draws.
About the European draw. Not that we're...
The Champions League. Here we go. Champions League. Manchester City versus Real Madrid in the last eight. You would have seen that as a final possibly, but it ain't going to be a final now. So who's going to win that one? Real Madrid against Manchester City.
Fancy City.
I fancy Real Madrid. I don't know why, but I think Real Madrid's got the good sign over them. We'll see. And then Arsenal against Bayern Munich. That's a big one, hey? That really is a big one.
Bayern can't really do much, can they, really, when you look at them? As I don't know. I don't think they've quite got it, have they, at the moment. I'd go with Arsenal on that.
Yeah, I think I probably would as well. And then you've got the Europa League set up as well. So they've been set up the same as the Champions League, as in, you know, we know who the quarterfinals are and then we know who the semi-finalists are. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting, isn't it? Because basically he's kept Liverpool and Leverkusen aside. So potentially now we have a final that could be Liverpool versus Leverkusen, which is Klopp against Alonso. And will Xabi Alonso come back to Liverpool having potentially lost the Europa League? Because obviously Liverpool are going to win it. Let's see. But it makes it very exciting, doesn't it? But, yeah, we've got to play Atalanta. And then either Marseille or Benfica, which would seem not the worst draw in the world, I have to say. It's not the best, but not the worst. And yeah, Leverkusen got West Ham and then Roma or the other team. I don't remember the other team. But anyway, very interesting times.
Good. Well, in terms of movies to watch, a good one. If anyone's bored of something to watch on Sunday evening, there's not much on TV. Have a look on Apple TV. And basically, it's quite an old movie now. It's 3-4 year old Greyhound with Tom Hanks. Basically, it's a story of a Second World War. The Ernest Krauss basically is assigned to lead an Allied convoy across the Atlantic during the Second World War, and obviously he's up against and pursued by the German U-boat. So it's quite an action-packed movie. Stephen Graham's in it, excellent actor from Liverpool, and he's on in the movie as well. So well worth a watch, I thought, that one. Yeah, and there's also a series on Netflix called One Day as well, which is based on a book, and it's like a sort of 9 or 10 parter, sort of 20 minutes each one, very quick. You could binge watch it But have your hankies at the ready, because it's got a, you know, it's quite a powerful emotional series. So great soundtrack to that one. I think there's plenty of stuff for you to have a listen to. If you like what you've heard, hit the subscribe icon and also hit the bell icon for any future notifications of any future episodes. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend. What's left of it.
Thanks for listening.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.